When Henry Roth's first novel called It Sleep was published in 1934, John Chamberlain wrote in the New York Times that Roth had done, I'm quoting, for the East Side Jew what James T. Farrell is doing for the Chicago Irish in the Studs Lonergan trilogy. The final chapters in the book have been compared to the Nighttown episodes in Joyce's Ulysses. The comparison is apt. Well, Mr. Chamberlain's review didn't make the novel an instant bestseller, but it has sold over 1 million copies since it was released in the 60s, and it's now regarded as a Depression masterpiece. So why does Roth remain relatively unknown to the general public? One of his most fervent advocates is Willing Davidson, the fiction editor for The New Yorker, who fashioned nearly 2,000 unpublished pages into Henry Roth's last novel called An American Type, now available from W.W. Norton. And it gives me great pleasure to welcome Mr. Davidson to this, the second installment in the summer's underappreciated reading series. Hello.
Thank you so much for having me.
Was it your idea to compile this, the last Roth novel, or were you asked to do it?
It was sort of a combination. Roth's last editor, Robert Weil, now of Norton, had all this unpublished material that had sort of lain fallow for ever since the publication of Mercy of a Rude Stream, his late life novel. He sent it to The New Yorker to see if we could use any bits of it. And after I'd gone through it and constructed a few bits that we ran in the magazine a few years ago, he and the Roth estate wondered if I thought there was a novel there.
Well, he had written a long novel, four-volume novel, later in his life. Did he intend this to be the fifth volume?
I think he did.
Because it's the same basic characters,
isn't it? Continues the arc of his sort of alter ego, Ira Stigman, who appears in Mercy of a Rude Stream. I think it was his intention, had he lived longer, to continue this story, and that was the story that I read in these pages.
And how complete was it? Did it require a lot of work, or did it pretty much just require moving some pages around once in a while?
Well, it was very complete in that it was a tremendous outpouring of work. Roth wrote in what he called an aleatory manner, which basically meant he would, for a few days, he would write a scene, and when he had done with that, he didn't necessarily depend on himself to construct the narrative flow. He, especially later in life, he had the help of his editors to do so. So it was a matter of doing a lot of rearranging and a lot of cutting.
Mm-hmm. This was 15 years after he was dead, so you couldn't consult with him.
No, I couldn't consult with him. And as I did this project, I was sort of course, always hyper aware of A, what he would have wanted, but also to consult with the people who knew him best.
Well, had you read much Roth before you got involved in this?
Yeah, I was starting in college. I read Call It Sleep in a class in college, as many people still do. And then after college, I sort of didn't connect that this man might still have works that were being published until I was in a community library in Idaho and saw the first volume of Mercy of a Rude Stream.
Does he really belong in this underappreciated series? Because you said you read him in college, and yet it's my experience whenever I bring up his name to all but people who are very literary, I get a blank stare.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well,
I mean, I'll say Saul Bellow, they'll know who I'm talking about, Bernard Malamud. To some degree, Roth is part of that crowd, isn't he?
Absolutely. I think he sort of is a writer who has had many lives in the public eye, and that involves falling out of the public eye from time to time. But he always sort of seems to come back.
Well, there are many echoes of his life within An American Type. I'm assuming it's very autobiographical.
It's extremely autobiographical, but as with any fiction based on the life, it's not necessarily the greatest idea to always draw direct parallels because there is an art in this transformation.
So tell us about Roth and about Ira. Roth was born in Europe. How old was he when he came to the United States?
He came to the United States when he was 5 or 6 years old. He grew up first on the Lower East Side, and then his parents moved to what at the time was the more prosperous area of Harlem, East Harlem. which he felt as a real sort of wrenching out, because Harlem at that time was not as completely Jewish as the Lower East Side was.
And one of his novels actually even has Harlem in the title.
Exactly. So he felt very much that a central conflict in his life was that he had been pulled out of this, derooted, deracinated.
Well, he wrote Call It Sleep in 1934. And as I said, he got some very fine reviews. Were most of the reviews as favorable as the one that John Chamberlain wrote?
Most of them were. He was at that time a communist sympathizer. And the review in, I believe, the Daily Masses sort of took him to task for focusing on his interiority instead of, you know, dramatizing the plight of the proletariat. And he was very shaken by that. And I think at least lore has it that that one review sort of really shook his confidence in his own writing. And he didn't really know what his path was as a writer. Should he continue to tell his own story, or should he try to follow a proletariat worker, which he tries to do in An American Type?
But there's a long period between the publication of Call It Sleep and the next novel. Was he writing all along?
He went in and out. He certainly, after the publication of Call It Sleep, he was writing pretty fervently. He went to Yaddo to try it. Maxwell Perkins bought his second novel, but he found himself endlessly blocked. And after a while,
because of the reaction of his communist friends,
partly because of that, and also because there was internal family conflict. There was, there were sexual issues in his upbringing that led him to feel very unable to tell his own story, until a lot of that comes out in fictionalized form in Mercy of a Rude Stream,
which is published after Call It Sleep is republished.
Yes.
So what led to Call It Sleep being republished?
Call It Sleep was one of, I mean, I feel like if sort of New York Review books had existed back then, it would have been one of those obvious titles. It was, you know, it wasn't obscure in the 30s. It was quite well received. So it never really, it certainly vanished from the public eye, but people knew about it. And he was tracked down in Maine by various people. Harold Ribelow is one of them. And it was republished, and when it was republished, Irving Howe wrote a front-page review on the New York Times Book Review, and it became a Book of the Month Club selection and became a quite famous book.
And has sold over 1 million copies since. And as a result, he felt that he could start writing again? Did that get him past his writer's block?
Well, it was certainly great encouragement. Also, the money that he made from it allowed him to work less. He was very poor, and he was raising a family, and they lived in rural Maine, and he was a waterfowl dresser, meaning he plucked ducks for people around, and he worked at the Augusta State Mental Institution as a caretaker. So he was really, I mean, I don't think there was a lot of time for writing before he had this financial windfall.
He'd also worked as a woodsman. And
exactly.
He was a Latin and math tutor. But these are not the sorts of things that we would assume somebody with his background would have wound up doing.
Well, he really struggled with the conflict between being an intellectual and a man of action. And he was fairly insecure, and he was a real struggler. And he wanted to be a real American who, you know, in his various conceptions, was a man of action, a man of labor, and he very much admired people who were.
My guest is Willing Davidson, the fiction editor for The New Yorker, who was responsible for putting together Henry Roth's last novel called An American Type. Did he give it that title?
No, that was a title that comes out of the manuscript. It's a phrase that recurs endlessly in the manuscript as he casts around for sort of some various American archetypes. He describes his future wife as a classic blue blood, a Boston Brahmin, an American type. But he also describes a proletariat worker whose story he's trying to tell in his second novel, he describes him as an American type too.
In Call It Sleep, he drew upon Yiddish as a way of coming up with an enriched English. Did he do the same in the following books?
Yeah. I mean, I think Roth's language is always a sort of heady mix of Yiddish, of New York slang, but also of the classic works of literature that he really absorbed and internalized as a college-age student and before.
So then he writes The Mercy of a Rude Stream, something of an epic novel.
Yeah, it's four volumes.
Do you think that he was thinking about Saul Bellow and Augie March and books like that when he was working on it?
I don't think he was. I don't think Roth really followed too closely the careers of the Jewish writers who sort of came in his wake. You know, he was totally outside of the literary world. His time in the New York literary world and in the world of publishing lasted for just a few years in the late 20s and early 30s.
And these four volumes, these pretty much, as you say, parallel his life, although we should not make too many assumptions. I'm assuming that you used his life, some of the things that happened in his life, as a way of helping you to structure the last book, The American Type.
You know, I tried not to, actually, because I tried to let the material speak for itself and find the narrative arc in the material itself. I didn't really want to impose it from my ideas of who he was.
Why do you think he kept on falling off the radar? Is there something about these books?
Well, Call It Sleep especially is a modernist difficult work. It's enrapturing, but it's not a book that you dip into for 5 minutes and follow the plot of.
On the other hand, if you were asked to recommend one Henry Roth book to show us just how brilliant he is that the one you would pick?
I think there's some consensus that that's his greatest work, yeah.
And then the others, you say he was helped by editors?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think he was probably helped with Call It Sleep as well. But he liked to work in a manner whereby he would produce great floods of manuscript, and he worked on these things for decades. And then first Robert Weil and now I have sort of helped that material to take shape. And, you know, it's something, certainly having worked as a fiction editor at The New Yorker, it's something I'm sort of used to doing is to helping writers along that way.
You alluded to he had been sexually abused when he was younger.
Well, is that something like... I'm not sure we can say sexually abused. He you know, had some...
An incestuous situation.
Some incestuous situations, probably.
Mm-hmm. And we only – is this something that we know for sure or something that we're guessing based on what he wrote?
It's not something we know for sure. It's something we guess pretty confidently, but it's certainly a major theme of his later work.
And is this something that we need to know about a person? I've always wondered about this. How much do we need to know about an artist's real life to understand what the work is about?
Yeah, I mean, I would hope that especially this latest book, that it speaks for itself. In stuff that is so autobiographical, I don't get the sense that we need to dig deeper into his life to explain it. There is art and there is artifice, and I think we can sort of let that stand.
In hearing that review, it was interesting to hear that John Chamberlain was comparing him just to this book to the Studs Lonergan trilogy, because Studs Lonergan, the James T. Farrell books, have kind of fallen out of public consciousness as well. At one time, they were considered among the great works of American literature.
Absolutely.
Do they turn out to be dated, or should we be looking at James T. Farrell again?
Well, I think people are sort of started. I think a couple of James T. Farrell novels were re-released a year or two ago, maybe not to great publicity. But, you know, I think those things are always worth reinvestigating.
And when Chamberlain compared the final chapters in Call It Sleep to Joyce?
Well, that's a very striking comparison, and I think it's very perceptive, actually, because at that time, Roth really felt himself enraptured by modernists, and Joyce and Pound especially. Later in life, he totally rejected Joyce and Pound, in part because of what he perceived, and in Pound's case certainly was, anti-Semitism. So Roth really, through the course of his life, moved from being very passionate about that modernism to being to really cooling on it.
Are all the books in print now?
They are. They are all in print.
And they're all from Norton, including Call It Sleep?
No. The new one is from Norton. An American Type is from Norton. Call It Sleep is published in various editions. And I think Mercy of a Rude Stream is from St. Martin's Press.
Hmm. But meanwhile, we once again have Henry Roth to evaluate, and some people would say to reconsider as one of the great writers of the 20th century, at least American writers.
Which is not a bad thing.
And I want to thank you so much for coming by to talk about Henry Roth and the novels. And that's five altogether?
That would make three novels, but...
No, six altogether.
Six volumes of three novels.
Beginning with Call It Sleep. Willing Davidson is the fiction editor for The New Yorker, and he is responsible for putting together the last of those novels, An American Type, which is available from W.W. Norton. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much for having me.